Welcome to another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. We want to talk with you this week about having a more meaningful Advent and Christmas season.
To some degree, every generation must learn anew what it means to practice the sacramental life of our church. We just simply cannot assume that it moves from one generation to the next like DNA or a virus. Children must see these things practiced. They must see the role that confession plays in the home. They must see that Vespers precedes the Divine Liturgy. They must see the life of the church lived out, or they literally, within one generation, will not know it's there.
I don't know about you, but for our family and friends, every year we decry the start of the Christmas music before Thanksgiving, and the emphasis on finding the best gifts and having the best parties and all the rest that goes with it. We always say we're going to make sure the meaning of Christ coming to earth, being born of a virgin, and living among us is the main emphasis at this time of year. How about you? Well, we're going to offer some thoughts about how to do that on today's broadcast. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts, Father Christopher Metropoulos. We're also going to share a short visit with a regular contributor to this program who will tell us about two saints of the Orthodox Christian Church whom we remember and celebrate at this time in this month. If you're not familiar with Come Receive the Light, we are a ministry of the Orthodox Christian Network and reach out around the world on the web at myocn.net plus Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. If you're listening to us on a radio station, come visit us on the web. This program is just the tip of the ministry iceberg. Again, that's Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and myocn.net. With our first guest, here's Father Chris.
It's a pleasure to welcome once again Dr. David Ford. He is a professor of church history at St. Tikhon's Orthodox Theological Seminary in South Canaan, Pennsylvania. He has a monthly series on OCN which talks about the lives of married saints. He and his wife Mary have written an excellent book, Marriage as a Path to Holiness, Lives of Married Saints. Welcome, David. Nice to have you on the program again.
Nice to be back, Father Chris.
Who are we talking about today?
Well, today we're talking about St. Justinian the Emperor and his wife, the Empress, St. Theodora.
Okay. And they had sort of a Cinderella beginning, didn't they? Tell us about that.
Yes. He was living in Constantinople. This is the early part of the 6th century. He was serving as chief advisor to his uncle, who was the emperor. And meanwhile, she was kind of a lowly wool spinner in the city. She had a very low-class background. She had actually been an actress in the circus. But she was working as a wool spinner in a shop somewhere in the capital, and it's likely that he met her there.
Now, it's kind of different because they're from opposing social structures then. So did they keep their distance while ruling the empire? I mean, how did they do this together?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Justinian himself had a lower class background. He was of peasant stock, but he had come to Constantinople through his uncle, at the invitation of his uncle. And so it was around 520 when Justinian, who by then was kind of his uncle's right-hand man, almost like the power behind the throne. So when he meets Theodora, it must have been something like love at first sight. But then he realized he had to actually change the law because it was against the law for aristocrats to marry commoners. So he arranged to have her receive a high honor. And then he had a change in the laws made saying that a retired actress who had received a high honor could marry a nobleman.
I guess it pays when you're the emperor, right? You can change things around.
That's right. So it was negotiated and true love prevailed.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Isn't that great?
Now, they made several changes in the city itself in Constantinople. Could you share some of those with us?
Well, they ruled as Augustus and Augusta, as co-emperors, really, literally. So they did everything together. They compiled a new legal code that includes his personal statement of faith in Christ. And especially they made changes on the landscape, the cityscape. They built the most famous church ever built in Christendom, Hagia Sophia, as well as about 30 other churches they either built or renovated. And, of course, most everyone knows about Hagia Sophia, the tremendous dome, over 100 feet in diameter and
huge.
Over 180 feet high. It was actually the largest church in Christendom for about 1,000 years.
Well, I know they made many contributions to the church by defending the Orthodox Christian faith.
Yes, so that's correct.
Can you tell us sort of a brief description of some of the importances there?
Sure. Well, Justinian himself was probably even the leading theologian of his day. The controversy at the time was concerning monophysitism, which was a movement within the Christian world that was overemphasizing Christ's divinity and somehow compromising Christ's full humanity. Mm-hmm. And he is actually the one who came up with the plan that eventually led to the calling of the Fifth Ecumenical Council.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's one of the seven great councils.
Yes.
He's the one who called it, and the precise reason for calling it was to win back the Monophysites. So there was a great pastoral concern for the unity of the church that he was expressing there.
Now, there's also a hymn that was connected to this. Am I right?
Yes, yes. The hymn we sing in every divine liturgy, O only begotten Son and Word of God, who art immortal, yet disdained for our salvation, to become incarnate of the Holy Theotokos and ever Virgin Mary. That hymn is attributed to St. Justinian, the emperor.
Did they have any children?
Actually, no. They had no children. Mm-hmm. Justinian was older when they married. I don't know if that was a factor. He was 43, mm-hmm. and she was 25 when they married. Had no children, and maybe in a way that increased their devotion to each other.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
I'm not sure. But they had they were really a great example of a husband and wife team.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke about a Cinderella beginning, but what about
yes.
the ending? I mean, did they live happily ever after? What happened to them?
Well, yes. Theodora actually died relatively young, at the age of 48.
Mm.
So they did have 23 years together.
Mm-hmm.
But he was heartbroken and never probably fully recovered from the tragic loss of his beloved partner. He did live another 17 years,
mm-hmm.
and it was in that time, actually 5 years after Theodora died, that he called the Fifth Ecumenical Council.
When are they remembered in the church calendar, Doctor?
Yes, November 14th is their day.
Okay. Well, as always, Dr. Ford, it's just a pleasure to have you on the program and to have you sharing these, because I think some people, when they think of saints, they think of people who not necessarily married, they're celibate.
Right.
And it's good for us today to hear about these special people who dedicated their entire lives to the church, and therefore the church recognized them. God bless you, sir. Thank you for your work.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Father.
Dr. David Ford's book is entitled The Lives of Married Saints, co-authored with his wife, Dr. Mary Ford. That book and many others are available in the OCN online bookstore when you go to our website at myocn.net, which is a great place to look for that Christmas gift with a deeper meaning and purpose. Our bookstore takes you to Amazon, and any purchase you make on Amazon, when you click through from OCN, generates a donation back to the ministry. We think that's a pretty important fact to keep in mind. You're listening to Come Receive the Light, a weekly broadcast ministry from the Orthodox Christian Network, a nonprofit outreach supported by listeners just like yourself. Our next guest, Terry Mattingly, is an author, a professor and lecturer, and a columnist writing for the Scripps Howard News Service. His column, entitled On Religion, has been a regular go-to source since 1988 for tens of thousands of readers seeking intelligent dialogue on religion around the world. He's been a regular guest on Come Receive the Light, and Father Chris has caught up with him once again by phone.
Terry, there's so much we could talk about here, and of course, our theme has been putting Christ back in Christmas. But before we get to Christmas, I think we've got a lot of things that happen during the Nativity fast, don't we?
Yeah, I guess the main thing we could put Christmas back in Christmas.
There you go.
That would be one of the things that the struggles we have, because to some degree, the Christmas season has just kind of like burst out of the dam and is spread out all over the map. There's a beer commercial that always gets under my skin. You start seeing it usually about 2 or 3 weeks before Thanksgiving, and it's the one with the palm tree all lit up with lights and Feliz Navidad. I think every year that commercial moves back another week.
Mm-hmm.
I also take a perverse joy in noting all the ways people misuse the 12 days. I mean, on television. There are 12-day of Christmas movie festivals, some of which begin on Thanksgiving. There are, NBC has been known to do the 12 days of Christmas and have it end 10 days before Christmas. Just, I mean, it's like it's a concept that everybody likes, but nobody has any idea where it came from or what it actually is.
I mean, my understanding is that it begins at Christmas Day and then ends at Theophany. That's the understanding
right.
of the 12 days of Christmas that we have from
right.
an Orthodox perspective, right?
Exactly, okay. And that this actually in Western culture remained a pretty big deal on into the 19th century and even early in the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
I point out to many of my friends the delightful movie, the Cary Grant movie, the Bishop's Wife, which is set when a bishop, an Episcopal bishop, has this crisis in his life, and he calls for an angel, and Cary Grant shows up as an angel, of course. Who else would you want to have show up? But the whole point is that it's set like on Christmas Eve, and on Christmas Eve, everyone is going out and beginning to do their decorations, just like in Dickens.
Okay.
In other words, you have people out shopping and getting their trees, and the whole point is that Christmas is just starting. They're getting ready for the traditional 12 days.
All right.
We see the same thing in A Christmas Carol by Dickens.
Yes. Well, let's go back a little bit. We have in the Orthodox Christian Church, of course, the beginning of a Nativity fast. Many people know it as Advent. And that begins on November the 15th. There's a crisis even in some Orthodox homes that, well, wait a minute, it's Thanksgiving and we have to eat turkey, so we break the fast on that day. But we've dealt with that before. Let's remind our listeners that Archbishop Michael, at least of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese, issued an encyclical that Americans of an Orthodox descent, let's put it that way, are able to break the fast on that day because
yep.
we live in America. And
the same thing has been circulated in the Antiochian Archdiocese.
Has it? Okay,
as well.
Good. All right, so that's we'll deal with that. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in there. There's the Feast of the Mother of God. There's the Feast of St. Nicholas. There's a Feast of St. Spiridon. All these things are happening before Christmas. Talk to us about that.
Well, the main thing is that all of this religious observance and all of this religious symbolism and my family, we've placed a heavy emphasis on the Feast of St. Nicholas, and I personally think more Orthodox parishes should kind of salute him as the patron saint of abandoned and endangered children by having maybe some sort of emphasis for poor children or crisis pregnancies or something mm-hmm. on his day. We have all of this tremendous religious content, but what's really happened is it's all being steamrolled under the fact that our culture has decided that the actual Christmas season is Thanksgiving to Christmas, because that's what works best for the mall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very few people realize that our actual date of Thanksgiving and when it was moved back early in the 20th century by the U.S. Congress, they've actually worked to create like the optimal shopping season.
Mm-hmm.
The old saying among journalists is that the national economy runs on basically two things: the Pentagon, and Christmas. There's more truth in that than we would like to admit.
I was just going to say that.
but the point is, you have to genuinely be countercultural to try to avoid being steamrolled. The other thing that happens is the busier we get, the further back we start slipping in terms of moving our celebrations. In other words, if the middle of December is all jammed full of Christmas events already at your office and you know, at your public school and all of these other parts of the public square, then the temptation is to start moving other celebrations back further. I once went to a college faculty Christmas party, which was held before the Feast of St. Nicholas. I mean, like, we were on December the 2nd or something like that, and we're having a Christmas party. So we are attempting, in a way, to subvert the calendar of our society in an attempt to remember the calendar the church has given us.
Let me ask you this, Terry. Why is it that we so easily abandon those things that were so sacred to our families, to our traditions, to our faith for something that is new? I mean, have we actually bought into this? Is it a temporary thing? Is it a cycle we're going through? Actually, today I met with a grandmother in my office, and she came to me and she said, you know, my grandson married someone who is a Buddhist, and I don't know why he did that. I'm trying to understand it, because doesn't that mean that he's actually given up his faith? And I talked with her about that, and I said, well, you know, we're not very relevant anymore. That's what I'm seeing happening, that we are just so willing to sell out in order to be relevant to society, but there is no relevance to the one true Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. Can you address that for me?
The first thing that leapt into my mind was a saying I once heard from an evangelical, actually, but it would apply to anyone. It simply stated, God has no grandchildren. And it's amazing to me how quickly we can lose connections in terms of the generations. I don't know how many Orthodox grandparents I've heard say exactly what you just said, Father.
Yes.
You know, about situations that have caused them so much pain. And I know this is something that can happen in all families, and I'm not trying to signal out any particular group of Orthodox, but I think this is particularly painful for ethnic Orthodox who've come to America from the old country, and they've thought of America as this great environment, and that it was going to do so much for their children and for their grandchildren. And then they look up after only one generation, and it's like they've lost touch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's one of the things we must stress, and not just in terms of the observance of religious holidays. To some degree, every generation must learn anew what it means to practice the sacramental life of our church. We just simply cannot assume that it moves from one generation to the next like DNA or a virus. Children must see these things practiced. They must see the role that confession plays in the home. They must see that Vespers precedes the Divine Liturgy. They must see the life of the church lived out, or they literally, within one generation, will not know it's there.
I agree with you totally. So how do we bring that relevance back? How do we say putting Christmas back in Christmas, or Christ back in Christmas, through these various holidays and feast days that we're going to go through now?
Well, this is a very heavy subject and a very, at times, depressing one when you talk about this kind of a collision with a culture. So let me make a joke out of this for a second.
Okay.
One of my goals in life is to be arrested for caroling during the 12 days. I figure that at the very least, if some of our churches could get some of their own celebrations into the 12 days, I think that would help.
Yes.
I mean, instead, so many of our churches pack things in right before Christmas Day for some reason and just add to the confusion and add to the conflict. Trust me, Father, the restaurants are wide open. I mean, except for, you know, New Year's. If you want to have a Christmas party or a Christmas celebration during the actual 12 days of Christmas, your facilities in your town and probably the schedules of your parishioners are going to be much more open than if you try to get it in the first 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas.
Very true. That's true.
So we could actually make some public efforts of our own. I remember when I first converted to Orthodoxy and we were in the mountains of Tennessee and the small city of Johnson City, we decided to try to do some ads. And we took out an ad about the time of the Feast of St. Nicholas, and the ad simply had an image of St. Nicholas, and then it simply said, yes, there is a St. Nicholas. You know, a takeoff on the famous, yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Right.
And then after Christmas, when all of the other religious ads, you know, had filled the paper, all the churches announcing performances of the Messiah, which, of course, is an Easter cantata, but, you know, all the other things that go on in your typical city, we actually took out our ad for Christmas. We took it out after the 25th, and it was simply an image of the Theotokos and the Christ child, and it's all it said under the ad was, "This is Christmas."
Hmm.
And then the, you know, and then our church, and how to get in touch with our church at its website. I think to some degree we have to at least try this before we can say that it's failed. I think there might be people in America who have been so steamrolled and, you know, driven down by the crush of the Christmas machine. There might actually be some people out there who at this time of year wonder to themselves, what did Christmas used to be about?
Mm-hmm.
And they might actually welcome a chance to have a quieter form of Christmas and to prepare for Christmas. They might even welcome a season of quiet, followed by what is supposed to be the biggest celebration in Christendom.
Lately, we've been watching the news a lot, and in the news, we see a lot of this information where there's just a lot of discussion about investing and spending.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that we are sort of spent out and that we need to invest more in that which does something for our eternal salvation,
mm-hmm.
rather than spending everything and then sitting there spent, if you will, at Christmas Day. I mean, I'm just reminded of we build up and build up and build up to Christmas Day. We open up all the gifts, and then we sit there, and we look at the gifts, and we say, oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
And it's done.
As several people have said, that, you know, we sit in a room that looks like a shopping mall has exploded.
Exactly.
And there's shreds all over the walls.
And then
we're left going, okay,
so what's
now
next?
It's time for football.
Yeah, what's next? Exactly. What's next?
The NFL playoffs are here, the next holy season.
Is it because that society has become very superficial and therefore doesn't want to look at the depth of it? Is it because relationships have become superficial? In other words, you have now email, for example, taking the place of a walk in the park or a text. Last month I looked at my daughter's text and she sent out 5,000 texts. I said, "Dear God, my child, what did you do with 5,000 texts?"
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening with the relationship that we are just so, and I see this at Christmas time, especially Christmas time. It's very superficial. We light the lights. It looks great. We get feel good. We get that feel good feeling. We open the gifts, and then it just reminds me of someone who is spiritually spent, has not invested any time in their future existence with Christ, which would be unto eternity, and we're happy with that.
Well, it's very hard to take a stand against your entire surrounding culture.
Certainly.
I mean, this is the biggest thing happening in American life for like an entire month, and it's just almost impossible to tune it out. You'd have to like walk around with those noise canceling earphones on, which I'm not advising.
Right.
But what I'm saying is we have to have some strategies for how to handle it gracefully.
Okay.
And then pass on some traditions actually linked to the 12 days. And I think this is of great concern to our parishes. Years ago, I interviewed a United Methodist Church growth specialist, although that's an unusual combination of words. His name was Lyle Schaller from Chicago. It's been years since I've heard of him, so I don't know if he's still alive or not. But he told me something really interesting. He said that if you have church members who are inactive, the one Sunday of the year that they're going to show up, as we all know, is Easter.
Mm-hmm.
If you have church members who have had something negative happen to their faith, they've been through terrible divorce, they've been through some sort of trauma in their life, if they're going to pick a Sunday that they will show up, where they're just going to walk in unannounced and sit in the back of a church, he said that season, when those people will show up in the back of the church, is Christmas. And he says he thought it was had something to do with a sense of lost innocence. It had something to do with, wasn't there once a time when I was happy and I was joyful? What happened to that?
Hmm.
And can I possibly get it back? In particular, he noted that Christmas would be an excellent time for our parishes to actually focus more attention on people who've been through divorce or people who are from broken families. Because if you take all the pressures of Christmas, then you add to that multiple pieces of families in different places and who's got the kids this day and who's got the kids this day.
Very different.
He said, for example, on Christmas Eve, there are often fathers that's their only night with their children. because they're going back to the mom on Christmas Day. And there's these dads who have probably never felt more alone in their life than trying to deliver a Christmas experience on Christmas Eve, you know, to their children. I'm not saying that this is for every parish. What I'm saying is that these are the kinds of things in our world today that as Orthodox Christian believers, we need to be sensitive to. We should see this as a season of outreach for the church, of healing and ministry for the church, and also for a chance for the church to take a stand to defend some of its own traditions.
Thank you, Terry. This is a topic we can certainly not exhaust, but I hope that we've given people a bit to think about investing in our eternal life and really in our happiness here on this earth that we hope to bring the kingdom of God.
Hope I could help, Father.
More from Terry Mattingly can be found through his regular column entitled On Religion. We'll have a link to that on our website at myocn.net. This is Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Next week, in anticipation of Thanksgiving.
My first response is that seems impossible that we can't find anything to be grateful for. God allows the sun to rise and the sun to set, and most of us don't even know what it feels like to be hungry or need food, and we switch up the light and there's light. And I think we need to stop and get out of our mind and into our hearts and really take a deeper look at what we really truly can be grateful for.
That's on the next edition of Come Receive the Light on this radio station and on the web at myocn.net. In the meantime, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.